You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we wish all of our Houston midsiders good luck in paddling their canoes, because every hurricane is apparently the worst hurricane ever. Clickbait weather! If you enjoy your trip here into the Midside today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Alternately, you can support us on patreon.com/themidside. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski. Joining me this week from our nation's capital, Daniel C. Richards.
It's been so long since I last saw you. It seems like only a week ago.
IRL, we saw each other.
That's right.
For those of you who missed it, we recorded the first episode. We took a week off from this show, and we recorded the first episode of Belichick Your Premises, our weekly NFL talk podcast that will be during this next season. And it was live from Midsider Michael's house in Houston. Because yeah. We were there to see the Patriots play the Texans.
Escaped just in time. Nick of time got out of there with that weather. I like
it. Is Michael underwater?
I checked in with him. They're not underwater, but basically everywhere else around them is underwater, so they're kind of just trapped in their home.
Yeah, they're just watching Pixar movies. It's pretty much, I mean, that's what a hurricane is, right? You get really bored and you just, like, hate your family by the end of it. It's normal.
Yeah.
Hashtag fossil fuels.
Yeah, thank God for fossil fuels, keeping folks alive in Houston. There have been a few deaths, but they've been minimal compared to if this had happened in other parts of the world where they use less energy than we do. Thank you, dinosaur blood, or whatever you're made of. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Which is why, Midsider Michael, you should be watching The Good Dinosaur and not Ratatouille.
Hey! You shut your whore mouth.
I was just transitioning. Because also joining us this trip from the hills of white privilege, James Elias. James, it's good to have you back.
Good to be back, Justin. I'm ready for another journey through the timeless expanse that is the Midside.
You just accidentally dropped a couple relevant sci-fi references. I won't even go into it right now because you're right. It basically is an expanse this week. There's a lot of crazy shit that happened. So I say we just get right into it in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
ESPN tried to stop tens of liberals from being triggered this week by pulling Asian announcer Robert Lee from calling a UVA college football game. Indeed, ESPN officials decided, collectively they said, to remove Robert Lee, who is once again an Asian sports announcer, from announcing a UVA game because of the tragic events in Charlottesville. The ESPN official statement said this, quote, "We collectively made the decision with Robert to switch games as the tragic events in Charlottesville were unfolding, simply because of the coincidence of his name. In that moment, it felt right to all parties. It's a shame that this is even a topic of conversation, and we regret that who calls play-by-play for a football game has become an issue," period, end of quotation, "except that no one fucking thought it was an issue until you made it a goddamn issue." Thank you, ESPN, the social justice sports network. This is in part, by the way, why we are doing a rational football show, because of this bullshit and all the social justice-y bullshit from ESPN. So, Justin, could this have been avoided if he just called himself a Bobby Lee?
No, because then people would have got really confused when they tuned in and was like, why isn't the comedian the announcer for this game?
Yeah. What do you think of this? Have we reached peak farce?
First of all, there is no such Peak Force is an anti-concept. I've been over this over and over again. They will always find a way to outdo themselves. They will always find a way.
It just violates the economic principles of farce.
Right, exactly. 100%. You couldn't have said it better. This is, first of all, announcing is an issue when you put Troy Aikman on, who doesn't make any sense because he's had so many concussions. So announcing has been an issue for a long time. But yes. This is like, so there's the idea, I've said it before in the show, SJWs always lie, social justice warriors always lie. This is a perfect example of it, because they manipulated this situation to make it look like they're the good guys when they're not. And I don't even mean the fact that they pulled Robert Lee to be, like, racially sensitive. But even the way they went about pulling him, they manipulated the situation. So what they did is, and I did research on this, they offered him a game closer to his hometown. So he can now get home from the day of the game and see his children and his wife after he announces the game. Versus if he had done the Charlottesville game, he obviously wouldn't have been able to see them. So what they did was they gave him a situation where obviously it was in his own self-interest to call the other game, and then they're making it seem like it was a collective decision. As if he was in on this decision to take away himself from the game because it would have offended people because of his name. He didn't give a shit. He was just like, oh, my boss said I can call the game closer to my hometown so I can go home and see my kids and fuck my wife. Like, of course he's going to take that deal.
And this unless he really hates his wife. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I don't want to get into
suppressed
like,
premise.
World. Yeah. Yeah. A suppressed premise that I hope people who are in relationships and marriages actually are in love. So, aww. I don't know. I mean, is Leah Korean name? They might actually hate each other if they're Korean. But that's a whole different discussion of Korean relationships. This is a thing that companies do in general. Like, can we stop this resignation bullshit? Like, the company decides to fire you into quote-unquote safe face. They say, you know, we all mutually agreed you would resign. Fuck off. Just man up and fire the person.
That's right. Fire more people, world.
Yeah. Hashtag fire more people.
Mm-hmm.
There's something very strange here to me that, like, Rand went in her books sort of depicted, you know, people in this, you know, very totalitarian future, always making collective decisions and saying like, oh, well, we made the decision collectively and therefore... Whenever I read that, I was just like, I believe everything in this book other than that. I don't think people will ever actually explicitly reference the fact that it was a collective decision. But now they are, and I just don't get it. Like, how could you... The thing is don't in our culture, don't you have to at least pretend to be an individualist? Can't you at least... Don't you... Yeah, apparently not. I was under the impression that, like, basically everyone is a follower, but no one's willing to admit it. Everyone's like, oh, I'm independent, I make my own choices, beep, 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 beep. And then no one does. That makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense to me is people literally saying like, oh, we made this decision as a collective.
Well,
that's so crazy to me.
What you're missing, James, is it's whether you're talking to people individually or they're making announcements publicly or as a group. Individually, if you ever go to someone, they'll never admit they're not an individual. Because that would make them feel shame. Because they know deep down that, you know, they're not being an individual, and to admit that carries with it moral responsibility. So they would never admit that. But what they're doing here publicly is this is all CYA tactics. If you're like, oh, we made this decision collectively, you can't point to one individual and say they were at fault. That's why it's bullshit when they're looping Bobby Lee into this, Robert Lee into this. Because they're saying, oh, he was part of our decision. No, he wasn't part of his decision. He just wanted to see his kids and fuck his wife. That's it. To make him part of your social justice decision is just a way of CYA as if your decision is rational when it isn't. And that's why they do this collective stuff. You see it all the time on Survivor when the Alliance votes everyone out and somebody goes, oh, well, I didn't choose to vote for you. That was where the group voted. And it's a way of them protecting themselves against criticism for what they're doing. And it's a way to make it easier to get us used to what they're doing. Because,
that's the whole point.
It's what the majority wants. That's what the group wants. Oh, Bobby Lee was in on this. Don't you see? He understands, too. It's his name, and even he gets it. He doesn't fucking care. I don't fucking care. Fuck you, ESPN. Give me Trent Dilfer back.
Words that have never been spoken out loud. Give me Trent Dilfer back. I did love the barrage of memes with Bobby Lee, like, photoshopped onto Robert E. Lee's head.
Yes.
On, like, a horse and shit. And I just, yes. I'm thinking about, like, your premise of, like, all he wants to do is get back to his wife. Like, like doing a fake Ken Burns-style letter from Robert Lee to his wife. Dearest Martha, it has been a fortnight since we last boned. And this drive from Charlottesville seems impossible. Pray I take post closer to home so I can see little Bobby and the chillin'. And you may once
so
again
you can see little Bobby
blow me.
Too.
Yeah. So there's that. Okay.
These memes are freaking hilarious. It's like a black and white picture of the Asian dude's face wearing a Confederate uniform.
I wonder why Bobby's wife's name is Martha, though.
That's the first Martha? Name I could think of. Yeah. Speaking of people in weird outfits, neo-Nazis are apparently using fashion in an attempt to normalize. And according to the Washington Post, the fashion industry needs to speak up. Yes, the first line of this not at all over-the-top article states, fashion has been weaponized. Yes, and the fashion industry has been all but silent.
Wait, can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
I just want to ask a question. Hasn't fashion already been weaponized when you have, like, suicide bomber vests? Like, isn't that definitionally the weaponizing of fashion?
Yeah, a little late to the game here, Washington Post. Mm-hmm. Or how about that shoe bomber?
Yeah.
That guy was weaponizing fashion.
100%.
Bet Nike wasn't.
I'm sure there's a Zoolander joke in here somewhere.
That's right. Yeah, jet fuel doesn't melt blue steel.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty good for off the top of your head.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Okay. Article. In the days since white nationalists marched in Charlottesville and President Trump asserted that some, quote, very fine people walk shoulder in shoulder with them, corporate CEOs have issued statements of protest and bolted from White House panels, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, except the fashion industry. Why shouldn't fashion speak up, especially now that fashion has become a stealth weapon for white nationalists? Neo-Nazis have bought into fashion's ability to camouflage, distract, embolden, reassure, flatter, and quite simply, lie. In the multitude of images from Charlottesville, the race-baiting protesters were decked out in white polo shirts and khakis. Others are wearing neat jeans, button-down shirts, cargo shorts. They are wearing jeans and striped pullovers that look like they could have come from the sale rack at a local Gap. Okay. Who? Did you notice that they threw the word camouflage in there, in the description mm-hmm. of what they're doing? Like, yes. What the fuck are they camouflaging into? Like, where are they camouflaged?
Well, I can... Do you want me to just jump ahead to Justin rants about this story, or do you have more you want to say for us? Because that's what I'm going to talk about.
It's time for the rant with Justin.
The last bit here, the protesters recognized the power of fashion's visual language. And they embraced it. More than one young recruit taking his first tentative steps into white nationalism in finding these conspirators in hate look so normal. Okay. Yeah. The thing I'll say and then ask you a question is, the protesters recognize the power of fashion's visual language. No, they fucking did not. No, they fucking did not. These people are not the sort of... English literature majors that would recognize the quote-unquote power of fashion's quote visual language.
Is this the rhetoric of khakis?
Yes, exactly. They fucking went to the mall, went to the sales rack, and all bought the same shit because it was cheap. That they didn't recognize the power of fashion's visual language. So, Justin, what the hell is going on here? Begin rant now.
So this is an example of something we talked about, I believe, a few weeks ago. But it definitely resulted in one of our t-shirts up now at themidside.com/store, where it's the false dichotomy between two sides of collectivism. And that's what they're doing again, is they're trying to force us into this collectivist dichotomy where we have to take a side between being a racist or being a social justice warrior. And they're trying to do it through the sides of fashion, quote-unquote white fashion, and quote-unquote the fashion industry by saying, oh, the fashion industry as a whole must decry these people. Like, this is the premise they're basing this on, right? So camouflage. You're asking what camouflage is. What they're insinuating is that I'm a racist. I'm a secret racist. Mm. And what I mean by that is I have cargo shorts.
Me too.
So are you saying, yeah. So from now on, whenever we wear cargo shorts, somebody can go, oh, well, you're a racist. Why? Because apparently by osmosis, if a racist wears the same thing that you wear, you are also now a racist.
Mm-hmm.
That is what they're saying. And then they're saying the fashion industry, the only way for them to not be racist is to condemn and decry this racism. As if you have to go around decrying racism, as if we just assume that everyone's racist. But that's what they're saying when they're saying, you know, institutionalized racism. That's what they're saying when they're saying the patriarchy. It's this idea that we all have internalized oppressing other people, especially me as a white person. And it all goes back to this idea that everything is collectivist and none of us are individuals.
Yeah.
It's just, it's fucking disturbing. It's disturbing.
I think
I'm not going to go around saying I'm not a racist because it's fucking obvious.
it is a little bit fucking obvious.
Well, it's literally fucking obvious, considering who my girlfriend is.
Yeah.
That is a very important point you made, Justin, is never, 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 never make the point that you're not a racist. Like, do not, because not only is this collectivism at work, but this is philosophical deception at work.
Mm.
What the left does is they purposefully package the issue as though it's some kind of obvious dichotomy, such as racism versus non-racism. And they put themselves and their extreme power-hungry goals on the side of the spectrum that's non-racist. And you get, and so what you end up getting is that I watched the McGregor-Mayweather fight last night, and right before the fight began, did you guys hear about this?
No.
Commercial by the Southern Poverty Law Center featuring a slew of celebrities all saying, guys, did you know that racism is bad and we should oppose it? And so the point is that, you know, like, there's all these celebrities, you know, we're saying racism's bad, we should oppose it, we should, you know, denounce people who participate in it. And it's the Southern Poverty Law Center, the place that, you know, puts people on lists for daring to criticize Islam when they themselves have suffered under the tenets of Islam. You know, like, for example, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, they've labeled as an extreme anti-Muslim bigot because of her, you know, because of her opposition to the ideas of Islam and stuff like that. So what ends up happening is that, you know, by making it about some sort of obvious issue, by making it about racism versus not racism, they deceive people into just gaining their support. And if you don't support them, you're a racist. So we can't participate in this rhetoric at all. To participate, it is to lose.
Well, and that's where something that, Daniel, you've talked about being really uncomfortable with and something I've ranted about before has come from, where they're actually creating a racism that these fucking white nationalists and anyone who's like the white race is agreeing to when they start defending themselves against that. I've said it before on this show. There is no such thing as white people. These people you're calling white come from a diversity of cultures and a diversity of countries, and you're acting as if they're all the same. You want to say white people are all the same? This is the example I always use. Go to Boston. You think the Irish and Italians are the same in Boston? See how well they fucking get along and go, oh, Boston's racist against black people because it's all white nationalists, and they hate black players who come into Boston because all the white people are united against them. What do you think? Like, white people are like, oh, well, we hate each other, but we're going to put our differences aside because our skin is the same. It's not even the fucking same. You're going to tell me the porcelain skin of an Irish person is the same as the olive skin as an Italian person? Like, this is a fictional concept, the idea that there's a such thing as a white race, and then people are swearing allegiance to it.
Yeah, it's a point that's sort of undermade and a premise that sort of gets... So it's a bad premise to start off with that there's a white nationalism. And then you have stories like this that say, oh yeah, well now there's a white fashion. It's like, what? We're two levels removed of stupid premises now. Like, we are meta-stupid at this point. Like, there is no white race, and certainly there is no white fashion. But, you know... One of the things in general...
Well, what's kind of weird is they've... Oh,
no,
sorry.
Go ahead.
if you look at these pictures, it almost seems like they are going for a kind of white male sort of thing. Like, they're dressed, they are, if you believe these pictures, they're dressing in jeans and like button-up shirts or polo shirts. If you think that but there's a lot of people who aren't quite in dress code either. They tend to tuck their shirts in too, which indicates to me some kind of like thing they're trying to do. But like,
I mean, yes, it's
the whole idea is by talking about a white race, the left has empowered people who do actually believe in a white race and are collectivist racists. Like, they're empowering these very people.
Yes.
Yes. And James, you're 100% correct that the people who believe in it are acting like that on purpose. But then there are other people who are just sick of the left, and this is how Trump won the election, who are unwittingly empowering these people because they're doing the same thing. Oh, well, you say there's a white race? Well, we're going to dress in this way, ironically, to say a fuck you to you people on the left, because you're going to assume I'm racist anyway, so I might as well just pretend I'm racist. And it's just,
yeah.
It makes all of this real. And it creates what we're at right now. Because you've got half the people who legitimately believe that we're in a racist, misogynistic, patriarchal society with institutionalized racism. And then the other half who are making them believe that by taunting them. And that's who we have as the president.
Yeah. That's absolutely chilling.
Yeah.
And it brings up this issue of it becoming in this insane ideological climate, you have to start worrying about accepting the wrong people into your movement, because it starts sneaking in the form of arguments that you feel like you agree with, but you gotta look between the lines.
Yeah, and it's a good reason to sort of abstractly, you know, to discuss the point of white nationalism, which I'm glad Justin did the now famous rant about there being no white people.
I fucking hate it so much. They're like, white people can't dance. White people can't play basketball. White people can't do this. Fuck you. Just fuck you. Like, you sit there and you assume I'm racist, and then you say this, all this shit about me just because I'm white, or all this shit about white people just because they're white. Like, fuck off. It's like the biggest, most hypocritical thing in the entire fucking world.
It's one of the things where it's like, if you're reading an article and it's talking about a collective group of people, just either put in the word Jews or blacks and see how it reads. And if you suddenly feel wildly uncomfortable with it, it's probably a racist article.
Yeah.
It's a good
litmus
test.
We have a movie. There's a movie called White Man Can't Jump. Can you imagine if we had a movie
called Black Men Can't Swim?
Yes,
that's what I was gonna say.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. Like, can you imagine if we made that movie, White Men Can't Swim, and starring Chris Rock instead of Woody Harrelson?
So, and all these black people just getting blown away by Michael Phelps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
No, it'd be wildly racist. It'd be wildly racist, as it should be. But you know, even aside from the point that there is no white race, white nationalism, white culture. Just the idea that, I mean, just the idea that we're focusing on the race, period. Like, right, because we should be equally criticizing, you know, a black power movement or a gray power movement or a blue power movement, whatever they are. Especially those blue
yellow,
power
Yellow, pink, Smurf. Red. Are we just listing the Power Rangers?
Heil Papa Smurf.
That's right. Something men under red father. Small men under red father. Communism. Anyway.
Or Smurfs. Soviet men.
Communism. Okay, what was I going to say? Oh, but just the idea that we get value from race at all is just a notion that feels like, you know, I know this is a fallacy, but it's one of these emotional things that I like, that like Adam Kroll does, where it's like, what fucking year is it? It's literally the year 2017, we're still talking about getting value from our race. How fucking stupid do we have to continue to be to think that there is some value from this arbitrary thing you're born as? There's none. There is value to what you do in your life. There's value to the choices you make, to the things you pursue. There is not a value to being white, brown, gray, blonde, blue-eyed, green-eyed, or anything else you don't have a choice over in your life. There's a difference between understanding your heritage and being proud of your heritage, but there is no value intrinsically from that thing because you have it. There's not a value in being right-handed because I'm right-handed. There's not a value in being a heterosexual because I'm a heterosexual. It's just what you choose to do. That's it. The end. Let's stop talking about the value from these intrinsic nonsense things.
There are minor quibbles in what you said, but
shut
there's
up.
Not enough time to
you're
go
wrong.
Into... No. No, I agree with what you're saying in spirit. I'm not being Dr. Drew. I'm not shitting on your point. I don't think they're worth talking about. The point that I want to talk about what you said, though, is you use the word heritage. And this is where people get confused, and this is how we very easily get to this idea of white nationalism. Because when you're from a geographic region, people tend to act similarly, and they tend to eat similarly. Why? Because when the world was developing, well, if you're in fucking Japan or you're in any other Asian island nature, what are you going to eat? Nation, what are you going to eat more of? Fish.
I was going to say donkeys.
Right.
It's not donkeys?
So, no, it's not donkeys, unless there's some sort of donkey fish. I mean, some weird Pinocchio thing, because I know the donkey was in the whale and all that shit. Like, I don't know. So unless there's some sort of Pinocchio thing going on and all, which explains why Japan loves Disney. I don't know, maybe. But anyway, I don't know where I'm going with any of this right now, because you've completely derailed me. The point I'm making is, though, people have a very hard time distinguishing between, like, oh, I like Italian food, or I grew up with Italian food. That's my heritage. That's my culture. That's my race. You know, someone grew up Filipino. I like Filipino food. That's my culture. That's my race. There is a difference there. And the difference becomes when you start thinking of it as a race and as a collective and just simply preferences or traditions and customs you grew up with.
And
that's the other thing is don't get stuck as an individual. Right? James, you brought up the word movement. I don't see it as part of a movement. I don't see myself as part of a movement. Don't see yourself, not you, James, but specific, general you, don't see yourself as part of a movement. Question the customs you grew up with. Question the preferences you grew up with. Try new things. That's what's the wonderful thing about being an adult is and growing up. You have the freedom in this country to try new things and go beyond that.
And adopt different cultures, which is certainly the irony of the social justice warriors' obsession with cultural appropriation, right? Which is like, you literally do want to shove these people into a corner and make them embrace this sort of white race thing by saying, oh, by the way, if you like Mexican food and wear a sombrero, you're a fucking racist for appropriating our culture. Well, of course you're going to back them into a corner then. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Cultural things
are
meant to be appropriated. That's the point of a culture.
Right. As a quote-unquote white guy, what am I supposed to do with that premise? So now I can't listen to rap music. Now I can't play basketball. So what am I supposed to do now? I'm supposed to not jump and dance and like listen to polka music? I'm Polish and Italian.
And what do you become when you shun the products of all other cultures and races?
Where do you draw the line? Like, can we not use logic because it was invented by the Greeks?
And Daniel, I have a question for you. Aren't we committing the ultimate appropriation? I mean, aren't you appropriating Pakistani culture?
That's right. Every night, baby.
And aren't I appropriating half Chinese, 38% Filipino, 12% white culture? Like,
that's right. Once a week, baby. Oh, see what I did there?
Hey, we all have different logistics.
James Naismith, by the way, a Canadian-American physical educator, invented the game of basketball in 1891. So technically, blacks are appropriating our culture.
Not our culture, Canadian. It's not even our culture, it's Canadian.
Well, he's Canadian-American, so it's like half ours. Yeah.
Eh?
Just to be clear. So anyway, racism sucks. All collectivism sucks.
It just makes me so angry.
Let's stop being collectivist about all this, please. Please. But let's talk about a different kind of collectivism, which is all this trans fun stuff. After trans discussion, a kindergartner came home crying and shaking, afraid she could turn into a boy. This is a story out of California, and apparently this was a California public charter school where the teachers were giving a lesson on transgenderism to make a pro-gender dysphoric classroom or whatever. So one person reported that the kindergartners came home very confused about whether or not you could pick your gender, whether or not they really were a boy or girl. A parent wrote, "My daughter came home crying and shaking, so afraid she could just turn into a boy." Unlike sex ed, schools do not need to notify parents about classroom instruction related to gender identity, school officials say. And teachers spoke out in support of their colleague's surprise transgender book club, with 7th grade teacher Kelly Bryson objecting to banned books or book lists or selective literature for school children. So, Justin, I guess the question is, one, is this the equivalent, if you were to say these things shouldn't be taught in schools, is that the equivalent of banning books? And two, kindergarten? Is that the right age? Are we talking about whether or not you can just chop your wiener off if you decide to?
Well, your second question answers your first one.
Oh.
It's not an issue of saying you can't teach the things. It's the issue of being a responsible teacher and saying, what should we teach to kids these age? What's the best thing to teach to kids this age to aid them in their intellectual and personal psychological development? Because here's the thing. This may be an extreme reaction to going home and crying about this. The stronger point is that kids were confused about this issue because you're teaching them a high level concept.
Yes.
When their brains aren't developed to that level, they're not developed to understand that, you know, people can reject their gender. And never have I said that there isn't a legitimate mental thing where people have trouble with their own gender, that gender dysphoria is not a real thing. It is. And the question is it legitimate to teach at this age? I don't believe it is. And I think the fact that they are is demonstrative of the agenda that's going on right now of undermining reality and undermining the truth and undermining normalcy. Now, we're just railing against collectivism, but there are men and women. There are boys and girls. Now, I'm not saying to think of yourself as those groups and think because I'm a boy, I can't do this, and because I'm a girl, I can't do this, or so on and so forth. We all have our own physical limitations. So don't think of yourselves like boys can't do this. Think of yourself as, oh, I'm a boy. I am this specific type of boy based on my genetics. This is what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of. I am probably, and I probably never was capable of being a good basketball player. I'm 5'6". That's just part of what it is. That's the way it is. And that's not because all short people can't be good basketball players. What's up, Muggsy Bogues? Grew up worshiping him as a kid. So you can be a good basketball player as a short person, but the odds are against you. That's not thinking collectively. That's looking at your own limitations. But what they're trying to do here is undermine all of this. Because let me ask you this. Why don't we make all classrooms cystic fibrosis positive? Why are we taking an outlier group and making that what we teach to be the normalcy? The percent of the population that has gender dysphoria and is transgender is so small. I mean, it's infinitesimal. Isn't it under 1%?
Yeah, well under
1%. It's under 1%, and we're making that a whole day lecture or a whole month or however long they're doing it. We're making this a focus for a kindergarten classroom. Why aren't we making cystic fibrosis that long of a focus? There are kids, there's 1% of kids who have cystic fibrosis. Why don't they get the attention? Because it doesn't fit the agenda.
Yeah. I think the...
Yes, you're missing the primary point.
Ooh. Throw down.
It's not balls.
No, I wouldn't put it that balls? Way. I was just trying to create a really hostile version of yes and. I don't think you're missing the primary point. I just have something to add here that I think is... I think this isn't essentially an issue of pedagogy. Because, like, you're right, Justin, at some particular age, it does become appropriate to teach students about this issue. You know, probably high school, I'm guessing, like, fairly late high school.
Right, you can say it exists.
You can start to understand it.
Right, there is this condition called gender dysphoria. Some people have it. This is what it is, and these are the ways they deal with it. Bam, move on.
Yeah.
That's what it deserves.
Right, but the thing is that this, it's not as though this is being covered in a kind of... you know, scientific way. It's being covered, you know, as an educator myself, the content you teach is not just about teaching the kid math or science. The content is about teaching them the way reality works, metaphysically and epistemologically. Now, you can't teach little kids hardcore philosophy, obviously, but you can demonstrate it to them. When you tell them about Newton's three laws, you tell them that you're implicitly telling them that causes lead to effects, and certain causes lead to certain effects, and they realize, oh, wow, okay, so I know how the universe works in a more fundamental conceptual way once they hear that. The content of this, I think, is probably... It wouldn't surprise me if this is very disturbing to children, because what are you implying? What sort of metaphysics are you implying to little girls when you tell them they could suddenly wake up with a dick?
Well, that was immediately, like, what you're saying is that was immediately the image that jumped into my head. Like, South Park sort of did this too. Like, if I can wake up as a little girl, can I wake up as a dolphin the next day? Like, it's just, the universe becomes random chaos.
Yeah, or, I mean, can I wake up suddenly dead for no reason? Like, I mean, that's not what they're being told, obviously, but, like, you're implying it through the metaphysics, and that's a scary viewpoint.
I know, imagine...
I don't know how relevant this is, but this reminds me of when I was young and I saw the art on a lot of music albums. You know how a lot of music albums have very strange art on them a lot of times, like very, I don't even know how to put it, like they're very, like almost modern art a lot of times, or art that's like very unclear in what it's trying to
portray. You mean like people
portray.
Were doing drugs when they were designing album covers?
Exactly, yeah. Like you can really tell, and the covers on art used to real on the covers of albums used to really bother me as a little kid for some reason, like so much so that I thought that like music was something that like only very scary people participated in for a really long time, like until I was like 10 or 12, because I'd see this art and like, God, what the hell is going on? And then I'd hear the music and it didn't seem too terribly disorderly to me, you know, it's just rock and roll music, like, but there's something that you know, kids are really good, I think, at picking up, like, the implications of certain facts. Because those, you know, that art really scared me as a kid.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine what this would do.
I mean, James, you're right, and it goes back to the pedagogy point. I was simply going from the perspective of pedagogy because that's what a school should be primarily focused on, is the pedagogy. But exactly what you're talking about is why we have the people we have as artists nowadays. Because kids see this stuff and they see what art is and they go, oh, well, there's only a certain type of person who can be an artist. You're just sort of naturally and inherently born with it. And you have this weird streak or whatever it is, you know, or it comes from pain or blah, blah, blah. You can't choose to be an artist. You can't be as talented enough and as educated enough to be an engineer and just choose to be an artist.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's, yeah, I mean, I would expect a similar thing, like, to not, you know, obviously the gender thing here is a social justice thing, but to think about, like, trying to teach 3 or 4-year-olds about, like, radical skepticism in philosophy. Like, I don't know if your parents are there. Do you see them now? So maybe they're not there. Maybe your parents are gone. We don't know. We can't really know. We can't know if your parents are gone. Like, you could create trauma in them.
We can't know if your dad's going to turn into a grapefruit tomorrow.
Right. You could create trauma in them from all sorts of things that are inappropriate for their age. This just happens to be the sort of cause du jour of the left. So, of course, they want to virtue signal and say, of course we're teaching children about this. But let's tone it down a bit, shall we?
God. Mommy, can dad turn into a dog tomorrow? What do you mean, honey? Daddy's already a dog. He's a man.
Zing.
Oh my God, I'm scared to see what will happen. This is like a whole nother Shriver experiment going on, basically, in our raising of young people today.
I find it's always good when you experiment on children. They're the people you should experiment on most.
Yeah,
not seriously.
In society. Yeah.
Very strong-willed. Speaking of strong-willed, Joss Whedon was never a feminist.
Speaking of artists and trauma and pain and all the stuff we were just talking about.
At least according to his ex-wife, Kai Cole. Regardless, it's his ex-wife.
Kay.
She wrote an open letter or an op-ed in The Wrap, basically chronicling the secret affairs that Whedon had over the years and how he was a manipulator and ultimately how he's not a real feminist. So, Justin, this is a little meta for on air, but you sent me an article from the AV Club. Did you want me to read from this article, or did you want me to read from the letter itself?
The AV something.
I would read from the article itself. Because okay. Here's the thing, right? The first thing I want to say is, I'm going to be very critical of Whedon because I think his character demonstrates that his ex-wife's story is likely true. But we always want to be skeptical when somebody comes out and releases an open letter and is like, hey, this person cheated for years. And there's no, like, where are all the people Whedon cheated with coming out and being like, yeah, he cheated with me, right? So she could be lying. I just think it's likely she's not.
Yeah.
Because of the what we've seen, you know, comparing Whedon to someone like Devin Farsi, right?
Yeah.
What we've seen is these beta social justice males tend to do this. They use worshiping women as a way to get around women and as a way to get the sex they couldn't feel they could get normally.
Yeah.
So I think it's within his character. But I do think there are interesting implications here for ideological movements and belief systems with the idea that, oh, well, he was a serial cheater or manipulator, therefore he's not a feminist.
Oh, interesting. So there's a lot of things about this story that we could talk about. One of the angles that I want to bring up is the sort of post-hoc denunciation of someone's work because they turn out to be a bad person. So we just saw this with Wonder Woman, where the left praised Wonder Woman to high hell. Then it turns out they were funded by the Kochs, and now it's like, well, I never really liked Wonder Woman. I always thought it wasn't that feminist.
And then James Cameron just came out and was like, oh, well, she's not a real feminist hero because she's beautiful.
Yes.
So we're objectifying her. As if, like, and this goes back to the Jenna Malone interview about Sucker Punch, right, where somebody was like, you know, the interviewer asked her, oh, is this a 12-year-old's masturbatory fantasy? And she's like, well, if it is, I'm a 12-year-old boy, too, because when I saw myself as a young girl, I saw myself as a beautiful hero, a beautiful heroine.
Yeah.
It's like the idea that our heroines can't be beautiful or we're oppressing women. Like, what the fuck?
So the article writes, like many women I've spoken to, I was sad but not shocked. That is in reference to Whedon. Maybe a little embarrassed I hadn't looked more closely at some very clear problems in his work. I love Buffy and Firefly and Dr. Horrible in particular, and I love many of the women characters on Whedon's shows that and what they stand for. I've also been outspoken about the utter bullshit that is Angel's moment of true happiness being a goddamn orgasm. And honestly, I'm completely lost now because I don't know what she's talking about.
Yeah, they lost me there, too.
So, what they're referring to is, in Buffy, Buffy fell in love with an evil vampire, but he could become not evil. Oh, no, sorry. I got it reversed. She fell in love with a vampire who wasn't evil, but he would become evil if he experienced a moment of true happiness. So they have sex, and he orgasms, and then he becomes evil because his moment of pure happiness is when he orgasms.
Okay. I'm also pretty confident that while straight white men can be great allies in toppling the patriarchy, they will never be the Buffy leading the battle. So why have so few white geek feminists pried open the cracks in Whedon's work? Oy vey. So, that's one of the interesting things I found about this story, is that you have the left praising these people, and then once they turn out they're bad people, they do this after-the-fact reading of their art to be like, oh, yeah, well, in retrospect, it's totally shitty, and you know, I was always an outspoken critic about it. No link to an article. Yeah, I don't like that part. But what Whedon did, apparently, according to this letter, is he had multiple affairs over many years, and he was also highly manipulative. He was always trying to get Kai into his value system and sort of reduce herself in order to fit into what Whedon saw as the ideal relationship and the ideal wife. All the while, he was sleeping around over many years. So, Justin, I don't know where you want to go with this.
Well, I mean, even what you just said is interesting. Like, we're talking about, like, how the social justice left is trying to force us into this collectivism.
Yeah.
And then they're saying, oh, Whedon didn't respect her individuality, and now we're going to kick him out of our collectivist movement for not respecting her individuality. Like, this is, it's just so twisted the way they go about all this stuff. And you know, I have, for me, expressing sympathy for Joss Whedon at this point, it's come back around, right? So, like, I'm a big Joss Whedon fan. Like, I have all his shows on DVD. Like, he's a great writer. He has some fucked up philosophy, right, as we see here. But he's still a great writer. I mean, he made the Avengers movie, made all that money. He's made some great shows. And for a while, he became a champion of the left. While he was working with Marvel. Now, all of a sudden, he switches to DC and all of this comes out? Seems a little bit coincidental to me. But it's all fucked up. It's like, this social justice collectivist bullshit is in everything. And we see how it's in entertainment now.
Yes. I did like the line from his wife where she said, "We're finally divorced. I'm doing architecture again and slowly getting my life and self-esteem back."
It's really like she's Howard Rourke, right?
Like
architecture? She had to pick architecture?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Whedon did respond, by the way, in a, sort of a non-response response, which is he said, "While this account includes inaccuracies and misrepresentations which can be harmful to their family," I guess this was through a lawyer, "Joss is not commenting out of concern for his children, out of respect for his ex-wife." Interesting choice of words there at the beginning, right? "While this account includes inaccuracies and misrepresentations," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Interesting.
Yeah, it's not saying it's wrong.
Yeah. It's not saying, lies, whore. Yeah.
Well, he can't, right? As a feminist, he can't decry, right? Isn't this what happened with Devin Farsi, where he came out and someone accused him of rape, and he's like, well, you know, I've always said you can't, when a woman says rape, you can't say she's wrong. So that left him in the position of being like, well, yeah, I guess I'm a rapist. It's like, really, dude? You've internalized that this much?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Whedon. Indeed. He was trying to preserve his feminist card by not saying she's wrong.
Anyway,
but at the same time, he would have said she was wrong if she was wrong.
I'm so over Joss Whedon. You have been a fan. I've almost never been a fan of Joss Whedon. So,
come on, Serenity?
Serenity is sort of the best thing he's ever done, but even that is sort of like, I don't know, B+.
Well then, we're actually going to talk about if it's the best thing he's ever done. We're going to actually review something here in a second in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. So to start this week, I want to review Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. This is a throwback. It was 2008. But I want to review it because it's very relevant to what's going on with Joss Whedon. Have either of you, James or Daniel, seen Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog?
Yes, I've seen
it. No, it sounds like something you'd have to be for to fully enjoy.
What do you mean you'd have to be four? I don't understand what that means.
It just sounds like some. It sounds like a show made for four-year-olds.
Oh, well, that's sort of the point in a way. It's a send-up of superhero culture before there was superhero culture. It was made during the strike, the writer's strike of 2007. Remember, that shortened a lot of seasons. And he got together with Neil Patrick Harris, Nathan Fillion, and Felicia Day and made a web series. So this is sort of like at the beginning of the web series movement when the Guild with Felicia Day was starting to get big, and Joss Whedon made this. And it's about this beta male, Billy, played by Neil Patrick Harris, who's in love with and idealizes Felicia Day. And he's trying to prove that he is worthy of being with Felicia Day. But the way he does it is by becoming a supervillain called Dr. Horrible, who all he wants to do is use his freeze ray to stop the world. And the interesting thing about this is, if you look at it, it may be Whedon's most personal work. And what I mean by that is, we look at the story that just came out about him and his wife and all this, his manipulation and everything, and you look at the way Billy acts. He idealizes Felicia Day. She's the one being altruistic, her character, Penny. She's the one being altruistic. She's the one being empathetic and loving the world. Right, and this is what we see. Modern feminists say men are these brutal, awful people who don't care about the world, and only women can really, truly care about the world. So that's really portrayed in the way Billy is. And ultimately, this is supposed to be a tragedy, where Billy is forced to accidentally kill Penny because of Captain Hammer, played by Nathan Fillion. And Captain Hammer is the typical quote-unquote asshole alpha male who is very selfish. And that's done very intentionally. So what you see here is Whedon has self-identified all of these issues he has with himself. But in the show, internal to the show, there is this subtle external blaming. And the external blaming is on Penny for not being able to identify, because Penny dates Captain Hammer, not being able to identify that this hero is actually a villain, and for Captain Hammer for being such a selfish, narcissistic douchebag, where it works together with that package deal. And the thing about this is, is this is so one. It's very well made. It is. If you ever want a stark portrayal of the beta male social justice warrior feminist perspective, watch this show. It portrays it perfectly. And I think it's probably Whedon's best work now that we know all this about him and we've seen him and we've seen the way, as I said before, I'll keep saying it, Devin Farsi has acted, he's acted towards Snyder, and we've seen our culture reveal itself in this way. I think this work, 10 years later, 9 years later, stands even stronger than it did before and looks even better.
Funny, when you put it on the outline for the show this week, I had to think, like, is this being remade? Like, I was like, oh my god, I haven't thought about this in years. So, thanks for the reminder. I have no other comment to weigh in on because I literally can't remember a single goddamn thing about it.
No, it came out in 2008, and it's just, I don't want to always feel the need to review new stuff. So if any Midsiders out there, you have an old movie you want any of us to review, just send it to us and we'll look at it. Like, every week we don't need to be at the theater or watching a new show. I mean, so much stuff is made and a lot of it's crap, and there's a lot of good classic stuff. So if somebody wants to see something reviewed or something relevant comes up, I wanted to review this week because I think the content of it is extremely relevant to what has happened and what is going on. And what makes it even crazier is that Joss Whedon is finishing Justice League. How do you go from Zack Snyder to Joss Whedon when all this stuff has just come out?
Yeah.
I mean, it's two starkly different perspectives, isn't it?
Yeah. It's going to be different, that's for sure.
Well, I hope, you know, Gal Gadot came out and she said he can't change the tone that much. Everything's already been said. He's just making minor changes. I hope that's really what happens when that movie comes out. But let's talk about other movies that are about to come out.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
The Florida Project is about a motel owner in Orlando outside of Disney World. I think in the 90s. This looked like it was set in the 90s. It's hard to know. And he seems to be trying to care for this little girl and I guess her mother by a certain extent, to a certain extent, who the mother is a single mother who lives in the motel outside of Disney World.
I'll say that the cinematography in this looks excellent for this kind of film where you don't have, like, usually you only see this style of cinematography in films where you have lots of fucking mountains. This film, not so many mountains, lots more stucco. So the cinematography and the directing looks excellent, and I suspect the acting is going to be superb, Willem Dafoe and children. But it's, again, we talked about this maybe a couple times ago, like the sense of life thing here of this is going to keep me from ever seeing it because it's just not, I don't want to just go into a movie and just be wildly depressed about how sucky these kids' lives are because their mom is a whore who lives in a hotel. I don't mean that motel. Pejoratively. She's literally a whore. Like, that's her job.
Don't disrespect motels.
Whatever.
It's a hotel.
Whatever.
Hotel, motel, Holiday Inn.
So it's sense of life tackle on this.
Tackle.
James?
I don't really have anything to add on what Daniel just said. I think I agree with every single thing you just said. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, I generally agree with the two of you. I think Willem Dafoe is going to look really good in this, and the young girl looked good in the trailer as far as acting ability. But to me, I'm going to go a step further. I think this is going to be a naturalistic movie. You know, this is the portrayal of what childhood is like when you live in this kind of situation with your mother, a whore, outside of Disney World, that kind of stuff. There's going to be this irony that they're close to the happiest place on earth that's designed for children. The interesting thing for me, though, is one of the reviews said the director, writer, is one of the most humanistic filmmakers out there. So now we have humanism associated with naturalism with these people. And that's terrifying. Tackle.
I don't think that's uncommon anymore. Because they're saying that humanism essentially means it, capturing life exactly how it is. That's humanism.
Right.
So,
to show how every individual life is valuable. That's how they twist it. No, we're showing how this mother's life is valuable.
Yeah.
Second trailer.
Rememory stars Peter Dinklage as a detective trying to use the memories around a tech genius to discover how the tech genius was murdered. And this tech genius, the way Peter Dinklage can use the memories is he invented a machine that will take out your memories and other people can view them. This movie, it also starred somebody, but I can't remember who it is. Oh, it also starred Desmond from Lost. So I was watching this and I was like, oh, this looks kind of cool. Peter Dinklage, you know, it's a little Black Mirror-esque. I think there was a Black Mirror about this episode. It's sci-fi. Not really into it. But then they showed Desmond and I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm a sci-fi shill. It doesn't look like a great movie, but
you just started screaming, Penny!
Yeah, exactly.
Penny. The original Martha, by the way.
No, the original Martha is Walt.
Different
first
context.
It was Walt! Yeah. They took my son! They took my boy! And then it became Penny. Yeah. So, I mean, look. We all have our preferences, right? I'll see a bad sci-fi movie before I'll see a good a lot of movies. So, I'm gonna hug this.
Hug!
Yeah. I'm right on the border here. In one sense, I like the premise, interesting premise. On the other side, the way they got Dinklage involved in investigating the case, where it was basically like, oh yeah, I knew him once because he saved my life, and you know, the least I can do is solve this murder for you, lady. As opposed to like, he's a police officer, an investigator, or a savant, or something, where it's just like, yeah, you know, I'll do you a favor. I'll look into this guy's murder. I mean, I've got nothing better to do. I'm a dwarf. like, that was the stupidest-ass way you could possibly get someone involved in the plot. So, it's going to be a toss-up for the time being.
You saying that the reasoning for his involvement came up short?
That is what I'm saying, quite literally. Well done. Might be the best joke you've ever made. I'm on the border here, but I'm actually going to go with a super light tackle. This might be a Netflix watch for me.
Well, it's on Google Play, so no. That's...
Well, fuck that. I'll never see it.
This is a pretty solid hug for me. This just looks like a fun thriller, basically. The only thing that it's just an interesting premise. Kind of reminds me of Minority Report. You have a murder mystery centered around some sort of strange technology. I'm willing to spot them the idea that, you know, somehow the Dinkster wants to solve the murder. What I'm a little weirded out by is why Peter Dinklage? I mean, he's a solid actor, but doesn't... I don't see how he, as an actor, integrates into this. An unavoidable part of his presence on the screen is that he is a dwarf. This character, as far as I can tell, could have been anyone of any bodily size. So it doesn't... Like, Justin, I don't know, what do you think of that? Doesn't the dwarfism sort of just, like, throw in this random element where it's just like... That doesn't really necessarily have any meaning. Maybe it will have a certain meaning once we see the movie, but it seems from the preview that it's just so happens he's a dwarf. That's confusing to me, you know? Because there's nothing random in art, or at least there should be.
You're a dwarfist.
Yeah, right.
So I get what you're saying, and I don't want to turn this into a long discussion about like the ethics of casting or whatnot, but I would say this. I think it depends on the quality of the performer. And what I mean by that is, let's take Idris Elba, for instance. Idris Elba is one of the best actors out there. That's inarguable. Anybody who wants to argue about me with that, come at me, because he's one of the best actors out there. He's great. He's got a great screen presence. The way he looks is awesome. I think we could all agree.
Yeah.
I'm one of the straightest people, and the dude's a good-looking dude, right? Like, if somebody's like, who do you want to look like? Idris Elba would be up there. As far as people I would want to look like. He's just all around great. So I think when you have someone like Idris Elba, you cast him in anything. Even though, as you're saying, nothing in art should be random, and the fact that he is a certain race would draw attention to it. But...
Race is different.
I don't see it as different, because I think Peter Dinklage...
Race is pretty incidental. Like, being short is... I don't know. It seems a lot more out of the ordinary than being black to me.
Okay, now you just pissed me off, because I don't...
Well, being a dwarf, not being short, actually having dwarfism.
It's the same thing, though. It's like... It's not. Like, he was born as a dwarf. Like, I get it. He looks different, but he is that good of an actor that I don't care what he's in. He's that good. I don't look at it as like it's an essential part of him being a dwarf.
Race now, if you're gonna, if you need a dwarf in a certain context, right? So, I mean, if you're casting Abe Lincoln, you can't cast Idris Elba.
Correct.
As Abe Lincoln, like that would be, or Peter Dinklage for that matter.
Right. But you know what? I would watch either.
Those are so laughably opposite of Abe Lincoln in two completely different ways. Put a little top hat on him. I'm sorry. Go on with your point.
But no, see, now I would watch. I know it's wrong. But, like, I watched Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I'd watch Abraham Lincoln Negro or Abraham Lincoln Dwarf. I'd watch either of those.
Sure, why but the point either? Of such a movie would be a separate take on, like, a totally, like, fantastic take on Abraham Lincoln.
Although,
whereas, like, this is not a fantastic take on dwarfism. He's just a detective who just,
so it's
he's
not
a dwarf.
Possible for there to ever be a dwarf detective? Like,
no, but again, it's art. Like, that's not the point. Of course it's possible, but it's just, it's not the point.
Although, but it's
like,
different when you're casting a show or a movie versus writing a book. If you're writing a book, I agree, there's no reason to make him a dwarf besides him being a dwarf, but Peter Dinklage is that good of an actor.
Okay. I do want to crowdfund the movie Three Postmodern Takes on Abraham Lincoln, starring Idris Elba, Peter Dinklage, and Margaret Cho.
Oh my god, slutty Asian Abraham Lincoln?
That's right. Uh-huh.
How does she bring the union together? I'll tell you.
Yes.
America will be brought together because we all now have chlamydia.
America, me love you long time. Yes. Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Yeah, actually I don't know. I think you might be right, Justin. Like Dinklage's sensibility as a person does make him a likely candidate for a detective.
Yeah, he's
cuz we know him as an intellectual with a soft heart from Game of Thrones. So like, you know, that integrates in with what they're trying to do in this film.
Right. Now, if you were casting the midget, the dwarf from Pirates of the Caribbean as this detective, I would be like, why?
Yeah,
or Brad
right.
Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Brad Williams. But, you know, if you're looking for a comedic actor, I wouldn't care if you put Brad Williams in there. The dude's fucking funny, and he's got an un-PC sense of life. So if that's who's best for the role, who's best for the role.
Yeah, it's interesting. It would be interesting to see if they address it at all in the film, though.
It would be weird if they didn't, just because, like, it's just, I don't know. I guess, I don't know, let's see. I don't know, maybe they won't and it'll be fine.
Final trailer.
Molly's Game is the latest effort from Aaron Sorkin. He's writing and directing the movie, or he wrote and directed the movie. It stars Jessica Chastain and the aforementioned Idris Elba. Ooh, and this seems vaguely feminist, I'm not sure. Jessica Chastain, Molly, the lead character, starts like helping out with underground poker games, and then someone tries to dick her out of her money, so she starts her own and becomes wildly successful, and then Michael Cera,
and then government.
Yeah, and then the government.
It would be harder to find a movie with two more attractive lead characters, speaking of.
I mean, were Kristen Bell and Mila Kunis both leads in Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Still, no. Kristen Bell is automatically not in the same league as Jessica Chastain.
Fine. Douchebag. I don't like gingers.
I'm sorry. Continue your whatever you were doing.
I was going to do was finish up with my take on this movie. Michael Cera plays celebrity player X, which I thought was funny. I had to look it up because at a certain point in the movie, they're like, and celebrities are playing in these games. And then they cut to Michael Cera. And this is, like, based on a true story. I was like, did he just out himself as, like, an illegal gambler? Like, can you imagine, like, Michael Cera was, like, this badass illegal gambler? But it would be funny if he took the role because he wants to subtly say he is but not admit he is. Like, what way to better indict or not indict yourself in this? By playing the role that actually is you, because no one would suspect you would be that dumb to play yourself in this movie.
Kind of funny. Yeah.
And just be anonymous. Yeah. Very funny. So, I don't know. Just like you were on the fence on Rememory, Daniel, I'm on the fence on this because it is Aaron Sorkin. And, you know, he is talented, but just, you know, we saw what he did at the end of The Social Network, where he was basically like, oh, Mark Zuckerberg did all this because he loves a woman and can't get over his pain type deal. So just his view of life is just one I don't enjoy. But then again, the cast is great. Jessica Chastain, Idris Elba, Michael Cera, and the Sorkin is talented. So I think this would have to be, I don't know. I think I'm going to have to do what you did and say tackle, a very light tackle.
I love Aaron Sorkin. The West Wing is one of my favorite shows of all time, and it's probably still, to me, objectively, one of the best TV shows ever, up through season four. But this was a thing where I think I've seen the entire movie now. The trailer seems to go on for an eternity. Like, they literally take her through the first whole part, and then they're like, oh, and now there's a plot twist, and she's doing this thing, and now she's in trouble with the law. It's horrible marketing for this movie that I think could be legitimately good. So this is still a light tackle for me, but maybe another Netflix watch, but I just can't. I've seen the movie!
Go!
I don't need to see the movie.
James?
This movie, one thing that was conspicuously absent from this movie was any firearms, so... That was a significant... No, I'm kidding.
So you only watch Idris Elba movies when they have guns?
Yeah, The Dark Tower. I already blew my load over
you
that
You must
one.
Love The Wire, then, if you love Idris Elba and guns.
The Wire was boring, actually. I couldn't get through, like, 15 minutes.
It's the best show in all of television ever. Yes.
What's that?
Oh, Daniel's making fun of the fact that everyone loves that show.
We did that simultaneously,
it, but
and
maybe
I
should have watched it
hurt,
for
but.
Five extra minutes. I don't like Aaron Sorkin, and only because of the Social Network. I just strongly got the sense that he just wanted to tear... Like, I mean, it wasn't his only motivation in making the movie The Social Network, but I got the sense that a major motivation was to make Mark Zuckerberg look like a little bitch. And maybe Mark Zuckerberg is a terrible guy, but it's just it was morally reprehensible in that Social Network movie. It came off as an attack on the good to me, because they don't even that I got that sense anyway. I'm not saying like if you liked it, you're morally depraved or something. That's just the sense I got from watching that movie. It was pretty gross. This movie looks like I don't care. I don't know. Tackle, I guess.
Tackle.
It's funny that The Social Network, I think, shows off the talent of Sorkin as a writer, but it's got a disgusting sense of life to it overall, and it's totally, totally different from The West Wing. The West Wing has this very positive sense of life. Even if you don't agree with the explicit politics in it, it's about, like, this idealized government that's legitimately trying to do good and not be manipulative and not be oppressive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the writing is outstanding. And then, like, he leaves in season four because he has a drug problem. And then everything he does after that is just this depressing, life is terrible, everyone is shit sense of life. And all of his stuff after The West Wing has been abysmal.
You mean he left show running the show?
Yes, because he had a drug problem.
Yeah. And also, he didn't direct The Social Network, correct?
I don't know. That was Fincher, David Fincher?
Yeah, David Fincher directed it. So, but he is directing this one, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right, you guys want to play a game?
Woo!
Yes!
All right, let's play a game. And, you know, we ranted a lot this week about fucking social justice collectivist nonsense, so let's make fun of it in Woker Joke.
Gentlemen, welcome to yet another round of Woke or Joke, the game show where the hosts have to decide if these headlines are real news stories or if they are satire. So each round, Justin and James will choose which headline is the joke, or they could choose that none of them are a joke. At the end of the game, we'll see who has the most points. That person will be considered Woke or Joke champion of the time being.
Couple other minor rules. If none of us gets anything right, neither of us gets anything right in a round, Daniel gets the point for the round.
Yeah, so I can win. is awesome.
Right, you can win if you get 3 points.
Yes.
Or no, you can win if you get 2 points, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so basically, no, if you get 2 points, you win, because there's no way we can beat you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. So if Daniel gets 2 points, he wins, but he can't win if we tie, because then only we can win in overtime. And also, Midsider...
How many different combinations and permutations are to the results of this game?
That sounds like math.
Yeah.
I just thought we should go in-depth on that.
No, I was just pointing out how Daniel can win.
Right.
And then also, Midsiders, if you submit a story that fools any of us, you win... let's say this. I'll buy you a t-shirt from the store. From the midside.com/store. If you submit a story that fools one of us, I will buy you a Midside t-shirt.
Wow. That is awesome. Midsiders do submit stories, and I really appreciate it. Also remember that Midsiders, you can submit fake headlines, too. Like, you can just
right,
make
no,
up
that
a
was
headline.
The rule. Yeah. If you make up a fake headline, sorry, let's be clear. If you make up a fake headline and it fools us, it has to fool both James and I, or whoever the guests are that are playing. If that fake headline fools all the guests, then I will buy you a t-shirt. Not just submit a story, but make up a fake headline.
That's right.
So get those fake headlines coming to us and win a t-shirt.
Yeah. Awesome. So, are you ready, gentlemen, for round one of Woke or Joke?
Ready, ready.
Round one is gay stuff.
Not headline. Butt stuff, gay stuff?
Gay stuff. Okay. Headline number one. All the cartoon characters from my childhood were queer. One more time. All the cartoon characters from my childhood were queer. Also, it just feels wrong to say the word queer, by the way. But apparently it's the accepted vernacular. Headline number two. Speaking of. Queer rights groups. Let me start that over again. Headline number two. Queer rights group plan to throw Mike Pence a dance party he won't soon forget. One more time. Queer rights group plans to throw Mike Pence a dance party he won't soon forget. And headline number three. I agree with Colin Kaepernick. The national anthem is queer. I agree with Colin Kaepernick. The national anthem is queer. Gentlemen.
What?
Woke or joke? Justin?
This is so confusing.
Which one of these headlines with the word queer in them is a joke, if any at all?
Yeah, so shouldn't this have been called queer stuff and not gay stuff?
Whatever.
Queer doesn't mean gay in their vernacular. I think it means like non... It means generally non-binary.
Fine, I'll change it to queer stuff.
Yeah.
There we go.
So James is correct. That's what it means. So good point. So I'm just confused by the first one. Like, I wanna read it. I want it to be true so I can read it. Because I think that would just be amusing to read. I'm really confused by the third one. Did Colin Kaepernick call the national anthem queer? Or are they trying to, like, twist it in this idea that now it's queer? And then what was the second one?
Queer rights group plans to throw Mike Pence a dance party he won't soon forget.
I'm confused by that one as well, because is this just like a way of them getting attention? Because Mike Pence isn't going to attend a queer dance party.
You don't think he's going to get down with the clowns?
I mean, that's a different kind of queer if we're talking about ICP. But I think he's more likely to go to an ICP, an Insane Clown Posse, a Juggalo dance party, than he would a queer dance party. I think if he was forced to choose, that's what he would choose.
Mike Pence don't like those homos.
So I'm having a hard time figuring out which one's a joke because they all seem like jokes. So I think I'm going to take a risk and say none of them are jokes.
Interesting. All right. James, woke or joke?
All of these have... How could I say this? If any one of these were actual satire, that's a level of conceptual entropy I am just not willing to entertain. Like, none of these would be, like, funny as satire. They'd be funny to me, but I don't think people would be like, what? I don't think people, it would be like a random word generator if you had this any of these as a joke. So they're all woke. I'm going with Justin, actually.
Oh, interesting. Well, gentlemen, one of them is a joke.
What?
Colin Kaepernick?
No fucking
Colin
way.
Kaepernick. Damn it, I should have
no!
won my instincts.
No! What? What?
Yes, indeed.
What?
Daniel gets a point. Boom. All right. Should
have gone
that
with
was my
instincts.
Head exploding.
Yeah, you should have gone with your queer instincts, Justin.
Explain to me how this was a joke.
Although you can now read that article about all the cartoon characters from my childhood being queer.
Yeah, so it was worth losing the point.
So it's worth losing the point to change reality with your mind? Yeah.
Is Scrooge McDuck queer?
No, he's not on the list. It's a lot of Nick cartoons that I never watched. So like Reggie Rocket. I don't know what the fuck that is. Spinelli.
Reggie.
Maybe these are from cartoons. I've never heard of these people.
Because she was a tomboy.
La Cienega Boulevardes. That's
Cienega
funny.
Boulevard?
The character's name was La Cienega Boulevardes.
Yeah, that some...
That's funny.
Yeah, that's definitely a reference to the street in L.A.
Yeah, Macy
that's
Lightfoot.
Weird. I didn't know her last name.
Anyway, I don't know any of these characters. Oh, I do know Kim Possible and Shigo.
Wait, how is Kim Possible... queer?
I don't know. You can read the
this
article.
This is confusing.
These will all be up
article.
On themidside.com. Okay.
I,
round two.
How is national anthem gay according to Kaepernick?
No, that was
no,
the
that's
joke,
the joke.
So it's not.
No, well, no, I don't know. F it. Let's move
okay.
on.
All right, round two. Race stuff. Headline number one.
Butt stuff?
Nope. Nope. Still not butt stuff.
Wait
okay.
for it, Justin.
Headline number one. For the umpteenth time, having a black friend doesn't mean you aren't racist. For the umpteenth time, having a black friend doesn't mean you aren't racist.
What about being an Idris Elba fan?
Still not racist. Still not racist. Still not racist. I don't know. Headline number two. Despite declarations to the contrary, black people... watch Game of Thrones. Sorry. Okay, headline number two. Despite declarations to the contrary, black people watch Game of Thrones. Headline number three. America's oldest man shares his tips for a long life, and somehow they're all super racist. Headline number three. America's oldest man shares his tips for a long life, and somehow... they're all super racist. James! Woke or joke?
It's definitely the third one. That sounds exactly like something The Onion would do. I'm just going like with the positive there. Like it just has the mark of The Onion on it.
The stench.
Black friend having a black friend doesn't mean you're not racist. They're always saying that, so it's not a joke. Like, yeah, and then black people watch Game of Thrones. That just sounds like something a social justice warrior would say because they're just grouping all black people together and like, oh hey, they all watch this show. It's definitely the third. All
man. Right, Justin, woke or joke?
Okay, I might be insuring an overtime here, but I'm going to take a risk because it seems so obvious. Because I know number two is a real story because I believe I saw it this week, or at least saw a conversation about this topic. They started talking about race in Game of Thrones, so I'm sure that came up 100%. And then it seems like three is the joke. And if it's not a joke, I want it to be real because how hilarious would it be if the secret to longer life was racism?
So,
but also, if it's not a joke, the other alternative is just like a bunch of things that are innocuous that are considered racist by the social justice warriors. Like, if you eat chocolate, you'll live a long life. But that's racist because chocolate is dark. Like, so there's potential for humor even if it isn't fake. So I wish it was real. But it does seem like obviously the joke. But because it seems like obviously the joke,
man.
Because number one is the typical like... hey, you know, we're going to once again tell you that you're racist even though you have black friends. It seems so obvious and it's a 0-0 game right now that I'm comfortable with giving James a point if I'm wrong. So I'm just going to take the risk and say number one is the joke just to possibly steal a point.
That's a good strategy. We'll see how it plays out.
It is a good strategy that doesn't work at all because number three is the joke. Okay. But your biting analysis was very much appreciated. Okay. Round three, sex stuff. Justin?
Justin, butt stuff?
I thought that smoke...
You gonna take debate on that one, too?
I thought that smoke... That's redundant, isn't it? Isn't sex stuff butt stuff? Like, do I need to...
Yeah, right.
All right,
we'll get
to the butt stuff. We'll get to the butt stuff. Okay. Headline number one. Report. A lot of people's dream is to have sex with a ghost.
What?
One more time. Report. A lot of people's dream is to have sex with a ghost. Headline number two. Parents, don't forget to include anal sex when having the talk with your children. Headline number two. Parents, don't forget to include anal sex when having the talk with your children. And headline number three. 9 surprising reasons why you should be watching porn. Headline number three. 9 surprising reasons why you should be watching porn. Justin, woke or joke?
Okay, number two is true. That's something they would do, and there's also been a push towards that recently. There was on the Cosmo Snapchat channel, I believe it was Cosmo. It was one of the Snapchat channels. There was like, here's a teen's guide to anal sex. And I was like, really? Really? And that was a controversy. I believe Ben Shapiro retweeted it too, because people were pissed about it on the conservative right. So that's definitely true. They've been pushing towards that. Number three, I'm going to need you to remind me of stuff. Number three was what?
9 surprising reasons why you should be watching porn.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That seems like something that someone would do nowadays, write that kind of thing. That almost seems like a BuzzFeed article. So that's true. So the first one is a joke. What was the first one again?
Report. A lot of people's dream is to have sex with a ghost.
I mean, that does seem true, too, though. I'm just stuck on the word a lot.
This is why we play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I probably lost. Because that could be the joke, or they could all be true. So...
Damn, Daniel might take this one. Because if he gets 2 points, he wins, Justin.
Right, so that's part of what's going on in my head. Like, do I want to never let James win? I also want to guess what is James going to try and guess? So because I don't think James is going to take the risk, and it could possibly tie it and send it to overtime, which now he'll do it because I'm saying this, but I'm going to say all three are true.
Oh, interesting. Surprised me there with your move. Okay, James. Woke or joke?
Okay. So... Oh, wait. It's 1-1, right?
It is...
No.
1-1, Daniel James.
Yeah.
Justin, 0.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna... So there's no reason I have to take a risk, because if I go with the thing I think is right, which is to agree with Justin, then... Oh, then Daniel could win. But I don't know. I think they're all real, so I think I'm gonna... Let's see. Sex with a ghost. That just seems like something that, like, a wonky article on the internet would say. And then talk about anal sex. Like, obviously that's true. Obviously that's woke. And then 9 reasons you're watching porn. That doesn't seem woke. That just seems like one of those stupid things that, like, journalists decide to write
Hold
about.
On.
Like, you know how they said coffee was bad for you? It turns out it's really good
Hold
for
on.
You. You know, here's a study that showed, you know, 9 out of 10 men who drink coffee had harder boners or, you know.
To be clear.
And, like, we did a study of their boners. Like, we measured them and the coffee drinkers had a bigger bone. I don't know. It's just all, you know, the pseudoscience shit.
To be clear,
They're
James,
all woke.
It's 9 surprising reasons why you should be watching porn. Just to be clear.
It's your moral imperative. I mean, whoa, what did I just do?
You broke the world.
I broke everything. But I'm going to break the game by saying they're all woke.
Guess who won, gentlemen? I did! Because one of them
was
a joke.
Oh, shit!
The first one was a joke. A lot of people dream of having sex with a ghost is an Onion article. The other two are true.
What? That's not even funny.
So I win with a score of 2 to James's 1 to Justin's 0, and we don't need a tiebreaker.
Smockers.
I do want to give a shout out this week to thehardtimes.net, which is a punk website, Justin. It's about the punk scene. But they just randomly a satire side to their site, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I've seen those memes on my Instagram because that's what pops up in the mid-side Instagram feed is punk rock memes. So.
They provided two of our joke articles this week, the Colin Kaepernick one and the Oldest Man in America one. They're writing really good satire. So congratulations to me. I won Woker Joke because neither of you could tell the difference between what is woke and what is satire. The tiebreaker for this week was, will the VMAs feature Miley Cyrus in a puppet orgy?
That's true. That's a real article.
That is a real article.
That's woke?
That's woke. See, I would have won.
And then I had a fun one from thehardtimes.net that I just loved the headline. Secret racist? J.K. Rowling still hasn't said whether Dumbledore would have condemned the violence in Charlottesville. Which I thought was just fucking perfect satire.
So many levels of farce.
Oh, I love it. Anyway, thanks for playing Woke or Joke, and until next time, say woke. Or not.
All right, gentlemen. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that I'm old because Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog came out in 2008. That would be like the second half of my first year of grad school, which makes me just feel fucking ancient.
Ridiculous. Damn, I was a freshman in college.
So, ugh.
James?
I learned that apparently I am becoming paranoid and I'm just seeing social justice and nihilism around every corner because when I see an actor I actually like being casted in a role I find interesting, that is Peter Dinklage as a detective in a movie that looks interesting to me, I am immediately suspicious because of SJWism. I immediately think this is an attack on reason and all things good.
Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that I am so evolved that I just don't see color and height. So I am
you literally don't see
James.
Height? Man, you must into a lot of things.
Yeah, I do walk into a lot of things.
Cannot perceive the Z-axis.
No, I was just being a jerk because I don't really have that funny of an answer, and I wanted to be the inverse to James. So
that's right.
But no, heightism is wrong too, people. Like, I don't believe in heightism generally because, like, it is better to be tall. But don't be a height supremacist. Like, women, if you're, like, below 5'4", don't be like, I want to date a guy who's, like, 6 feet and above. Like, fuck off. Like, have realistic standards. That's my PSA for today.
It's good to be short for some things. Like, as a rifleman, it's actually an advantage to be short.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, lots of things. Totally, yeah. At least three things, probably. I mean,
playing
the two
an
mentioned,
Oompa
Loompa? Maybe one other thing. Yeah.
What if they cast a tall Oompa Loompa? Would that be wrong?
That would be wrong. So, if you learned something, why don't you tell us on the social medias at The Midside Everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, at The Midside, where you can get all the latest updates and extra content, including images and updates about shirts, and we have conversations, and we share articles. It's a good time over there at The Midside on social media.
If you follow The Midside on Twitter, you'll see me go off every once in a while about dumb shit that people say, usually about Snyder and the DCEU. So if you want to see me just go off, follow at The Midside on Twitter.
Right, and if you want to see him get off, that's at The Midside on Snapchat. So... See what I did there?
That was a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Okay, excellent. So, if you want to listen to past episodes, there are a couple ways you can do that. One is you can go to themidside.com/podcast, where you can listen to all the previous episodes. Or, if you want to listen to the most recent episodes and subscribe to get them delivered directly to the listening device of your choice, subscribe to Welcome to the Midside on iTunes or Google Play. And while you're there subscribing, why not leave us a 5-star review? 5-star review 5. Star review on iTunes. It helps us move up in the ranks, helps us beat Welcome to Night Vale, those bastards, and helps us rule the podcasting world. Another way you can help us rule the podcasting world, is by becoming a Patreon subscriber. That's patreon.com/themidside. Patreon, for the uninitiated, is a platform that allows us to actually raise money every time we produce a piece of content. Well, how does that happen, Daniel? Good question, audience. Basically, you put in your credit card, swipe, and you say, I'm going to give these guys a buck every time they release a podcast. And then, boom, every time we do, we take a buck out of your bank account. You're happy, we're happy, we're going to Jamaica getting hookers. But if we do, and we don't produce a piece of content, you don't get charged. So it's not like this monthly subscription thing where it's like, we're going to Guam, and we're not giving you content, and we're still taking your money. No. Money when we produce content. It's awesome. If you can't do that, there are a couple other things you can do for us. One is thank the folks over at liberty.me for syndicating the show. Thank you, libertarians. And then two, if you have no money, but you have friends, make those friends into mid-side money by telling them about the show. It's our favorite thing you can do to your friends is tell them about our show. And honestly, it makes a great Christmas gift because it's free for you. Just put Welcome to the Midside URL in a box, hand it to them, just say, Merry Midside, Miss. And it's better than a lump of coal.
Man, so, talk about a dick in a box.
That's right. Oh, good one. Tell a friend, and until next time. Oh, wait a minute.
Also,
we got
a couple other things here.
I forgot.
TheMidside.com/store. We got our new t-shirts up there, so check those out. And what are we doing next week, Daniel?
Labor
Day episode?
I got so excited that I forgot. We're starting a new series called The Nolan Notes. We'll be reviewing Christopher Nolan's first film ever, which is called Following, released in 1998, I believe. So if you're a fan of the Snyder series, which you can listen to at themidside.com/podcast, this will take a similar format, except they'll be looking at all the films of one Christopher Nolan. So stay tuned for that.
And check out Following over the next week so you can have an idea of what the fuck we're talking about when the episode comes out. This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce. Do you want to say have a day or
no? It's excellent.